Hi, welcome to the Answers Network. I'm on behalf of Alan Cardoza. I'm going to be hosting today. My name is Steve Caliper, and online with us for our conversation is a longtime friend of mine, Jim Burns. You know, Jim, I'm the doing good, better guy. I love this campaign. I feel like from our faith and our hearts that we should be looking at what we're doing and how we're serving better. And so today's discussion, as we've known each other for close to 30 years, is on parenting and grandparenting, kind of doing parenting and grandparenting better. Let me let you take a moment and introduce a little bit about yourself and Homeward and what you've been doing over the years.
Great. Well, you know, Steve, I appreciate you so much, and you do better, period, in life. And you're a wonderful father, husband, and well, one day soon to be grandfather. I have four grandkids. So, you know, I was at ball games on Saturday. You know, it was a big weekend for that. I'm the president of Homeward. Homeward has four values: strong marriages, confident parents, empowered kids, and healthy leaders. And so all of our content from our website to our conferences, largest provider of parenting seminars in the U.S., it's all on those things. And it's been a long ride. It's funny that you said 30 years. I didn't even think you were 30. So, you know, looking at you online. But anyway, I know I'm an old guy. But my joy is helping families succeed, and that's where I put my energy, and that's what I'm sure we'll get to talk about today. And everybody, it's funny, they could be from the world of business, they could be from the church, they could be outside of the church. Everybody seems to care about family. And so, you know, I've often said, you know, I'm never going to have a problem with my job because there's always room, because no family's perfect. Mine either. I mean, I've laughed. I came from a kind of a dysfunctional family background, and, you know, had to kind of go through the messiness, and there's still messiness. I mean, it's never perfect. Yeah.
Well, from both of us and our backgrounds, and certainly it's messy, even in our current marriages, you with Kathy and me with Shannon for 35 years this August.
Well, you married way above yourself. I'm telling you that. I did too, but I'm telling you.
So Jim, just to kind of dive in, you know, parents today and even grandparents that have stepped into that role, the landscape of America in the last 5 years, even the last 10 years, is different than it was when we were growing up. What do you see big picture as some of the obstacles and challenges across America, how it's just changed? There's obviously the media, the news, there's things happening at rapid pace. The peer pressures and the social pressures. I mean, that probably just touches even on just a few items.
Well, actually, I mean, I think you hit some pretty big ones. You know, I was speaking yesterday and I said to a group of parents, it's this breathless pace in which we live our lives. I mean, there's a lot of things, all the things you mentioned. Culture is crazy, you know, whatever. And whatever angle people come from, culture is crazy. And so nobody disagrees with us if we say that. And they could be on a different, you know, there's a wedge in our world today on so much stuff, but not on parenting. We all need help on that. But, you know, one of the things is we live at such a fast pace. It's this breathless pace, you know, in which we live our lives. And, you know, a man named John Mark Comer, who I greatly admire, said, you know, hurry is violence to our soul. And so busy families are oftentimes broken families. Actually, busy people are oftentimes broken. I see that in my own life. In my busyness, sometimes that's coming out of brokenness and not out of success. People would go, oh, you're successful, you're busy. No, sometimes that comes out of, you know, not having good boundaries and having some more margin in my life. But I would say that's one of them. And then you mentioned, you know, the media. And, you know, it's crazy today. I was just speaking to some kids. My background, even though I don't look like it, but I used to speak to kids, about 250,000 of them a year. And I had the privilege to speak to about 800 kids in Richmond, Virginia, not too long ago. And I said, how many of you think it's possible to be addicted to social media? What do you think? And all 800 hands. I didn't see one kid not raise his hand. Yeah. And then I just on the screen,
you know, but I think it's true.
Yeah. But then I said, well, how many of you are addicted? I'm telling you, there were two kids that didn't put their hands up. All of them even knew that they were addicted to social media. And so, you know, today they call it fubbing. It's a brand new word. It's in the dictionary, P-H-U-B-B-I-N-G. And what fubbing is that your time online is getting in the way of your primary relationships. And so say somebody's married, it's getting in the way of the relationship with their spouse or with their kids or whatever, and they're fubbing them. And I love the word. It's just, you know, a fun word. But we're doing that, Steve, and it's not good. And so I think somehow we've got to get a handle on this. Even, you know, the head of health education in our government today is saying that the digital drug may be more dangerous than other drugs because it's catching us unknown. And, you know, it's changing the way we do education. It's changing the way people communicate. It's changing the way we work. And there's good things. Look at what we're doing right now. We're having a conversation with technology. Awesome. I mean, you're in Atlanta, I'm in California, and here we go. But we have to be careful that it doesn't take over our life. And, you know, so busyness, pace of life, that those are just two issues. One more thing on the digital, I just saw this and I'm like blown away that the average middle school kid spends less time outside than a prisoner. Mm-hmm. Why? Well, they're on their phone, they're on their digital device or whatever. And so I think we've got to get a handle on it and kind of learn to create media safe homes. And as parents, grandparents too, we've got to get a hold on this, and we've got to get it pretty quickly. I mean, I had a woman say to me at this conference I was at, she goes, so my 9-year-old is on TikTok. Should I follow him? And I said, well, first of all, it's not TikTok, it's TikTok. And your kid is 9.
Yeah.
It's actually illegal for your kid to be on. Nobody's going to monitor that. Mm-hmm. So this mom has to become a student of the culture. And that's one of the things that I think all of us have to do. We have to be students of what's going on in this culture. Whether we agree or not, we still have to be students of the culture.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many lanes that we could take this conversation, and I'll dive into a few of them. Jim, give us a sense of meaningful relationships and conversations that parents struggle with today. You know, what are some of those topics?
Yeah. Well, I would say
that parents are, it's like a danger zone conversation.
Right, right. No, we'll talk about school, and we'll talk about curfew, and we'll talk about sports and activities.
I mean, curfew, like good old days, like when the street lights come on.
Yeah, actually, that doesn't happen anymore. But, you know, like one that just cracks me up is sex. So all studies show, and by the way, both liberal, conservative, from a faith and not from faith, say that the more positive, value-centered sex education kids receive from home, the less promiscuous they'll be and the less confused they'll be. Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I'm at a conference 2 weeks ago. It was with Chick-fil-A. It was actually in your state. And I was speaking at a marriage conference. And I said, how many of you received good, positive, healthy sex education? Now, I'm talking to parents. It was actually a marriage conference, but I was talking to parents. One person put their hand up in a full room that they had received.
Good positive.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. And so when I even talked to this woman, she was awesome. And her husband was hilarious. And she goes, oh, we had conversations, but they were awkward. And so I came back and said to my daughter, Christy, I said, so, you know, mom and I kind of talked to you about this stuff. Apparently we're not the norm. And she goes, oh, you did, but you were so awkward, Dad. You could speak to thousands of kids on it, but your bald head would sweat, your ears would turn red, you'd stutter. And she goes, but actually, you know, thanks for having those conversations. But I just laughed because I go, is this going to be awkward? So as parents, we feel uncomfortable, so we just don't bring it up. So the number one place that they get their sex education is the internet. Now, I love the internet, but I don't trust the internet for everything. And kids are trusting the internet when it comes to to an issue like that. So I'd say that's one of the many issues. The other one for me, in terms of talking on the same, you know, genre, so to speak, would be drug and alcohol education. Same kind of thing. You know, everything says that the more you have good conversations with your kids, the better. But a lot of parents will say, it's not going to be my kids. But one of the things, when I was a youth speaker, I would say to kids at like Red Ribbon Weeks and things like that, I'd always say, you know, if you have alcoholism in your system, and I do, my family, I came from a family where dad was an alcoholic, grandpa on my mom's side died of alcoholism, and there's more, but you have a greater chance of becoming an alcoholic. You have a biological predisposition. Well, I told my kids that at 13. I mean, that doesn't mean that they never experiment. I'm not saying that. And as adults, they drink wine. They're not, you know, big time alcoholics. But I felt like at age 13, I needed to say, hey, you're going to drink. If you go to a party and you drink, and you can drink 5 beers or, you know, 3 glasses of wine, whatever, and you don't have any kind of a buzz at all, then you're a budding alcoholic. So those are the kinds of things that parents, I think, have to get their arms around, as well as I mentioned before, the harder conversations is creating a media safe home. I mean, no 16-year-old, when you say, hey, buddy, we're going to dock the phone in the kitchen after 10, and you're not going to be able to have your, you know, any of your devices in the bedroom at night, because you're staying up at night and you're gaming, and they're not all bad things, but, you know, the 16-year-old isn't going to go, Dad, that is the greatest idea. Mom, you're amazing. They're going to go, are you kidding me? Or the kid who goes, I'm 8, which would be my grandson, and said, everybody has a phone. How come I don't have a phone? He's 8. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, he doesn't have good ability to navigate the internet or these other kind of things, let alone, you know, what he could see in his bedroom if it was all closed off. So I think as parents, we have to be gutsy and courageous and have those kind of conversations about numerous things, but those are just a few that come to my mind.
You know, Jim, my kids, they're from 23 to 30, so they're adults and they're adulting it. But I remember when they were younger, of course, my boys, when they were in high school, I found that even just kids within their life, people that other kids that knew me, they just wanted to have a safe place that they could have a conversation. So it's not just in our kids. I remember day before prom throwing out a text message and saying, hey, who wants to come? Here's a southern location, Waffle House. Who wants to come to Waffle House? And it was just the idea of putting the conversation on the table. What are your plans tonight? Where are you doing pictures? What's the after party look like? Hey, when you pick up your date, your girlfriend, and you pick her up, she's going to be looking great in a beautiful dress. You know, how are you going to get your head around it? And I think that's what we're talking about is being available to young adults.
No, we do have to. You know, listening is the language of love. And I think you did an incredible thing. You get the A+ at Homeward where we work today for being that.
I don't know about that, but
that kind of a dad. Even for your son allowing you to have that conversation. But, you know, those are great conversations. Yeah. And the waffle, you know, with boys, Waffle House is great. I'm not sure that I can get my wife to go to a Waffle House, but, you know, that's a good thing. And that's what we do. And that's what parents have to do. And sometimes that works. And sometimes, you know, with your own kids, they may not want to even talk about it. But what I say about these kind of subjects is, you know, Steve, I would rather have 100 1-minute conversations than 100-minute conversation. Yeah. And what we tend to do is if we go, oh, wow, I just heard these guys talking about this stuff, we're going to sit them down at the table. We're going to have a 100-minute conversation about this. And now we've done that part. We can check that off our list. No. It's 100 1-minute conversations that you have. And it can't be luxury and it can't be preachy and all that. It just has to be, you know, good conversations. Your illustration, being at the Waffle House, asking those kind of questions, those are proactive, good questions that a lot of times teenagers or even young adults, they're not thinking that way. So we can help them think through that. And I think most kids appreciate it.
You know, Jim, another lane goes to media, but it's also just where teenagers and young adults get information.
Yeah.
You know, it's like 90% media or on podcast conversations like today. Yeah. How as parents is it that we look at how we used to obtain information, whether it be newspapers or old school?
I'm sorry, what's a newspaper? The newspaper is that white thing with a little black.
Exactly. Okay, I haven't had a newspaper in 20 years. But the point is that the content of information today is so much different than the information of where young adults and teenagers even get information. As you said, it's peer-to-peer.
Yeah. Well, it is peer-to-peer, and they'll even listen to the advice of peers sometimes over their parents because their parents aren't engaging in it sometimes. Mm-hmm. I'm not putting the parents all down. I mean, there's some great parents, of course. Great parents are doing, you know, many of them are doing really good. But, you know, I say to parents, listen to what they listen to, read what they read, watch what they watch. That's hard because they're doing it on a digital device. They're not, you know, my family had the television on from the morning until the evening. I'd go to bed. The television was on because my mom was still watching something. My dad had gone to bed, but he was listening to the radio of sports, you know, game or something. He got up really early. But it's harder today. Even their music, you know, it used to be, literally when I grew up, I had a record player. I played the Beatles music, you know, the White Album was my favorite, but my dad and mom would come in and go, hey, can you turn that thing down? Today, you've got earplugs and you don't know what they're listening to, so you don't know who's influencing them. And yet, when you look at culture today, kids are being influenced greatly by the music that they listen to or by the podcast that they do listen to. And it's amazing. I mean, young adults are all podcast all the time, and that's great. I love podcasts. We just started our own Homeward with Jim Burns. It's a really creative name. We literally just launched. But the interesting side to it is, even high school kids are listening to podcasts. So we've got to say, hey, I'd like to hear what they're saying. Can I sit with you and listen? Or can I do this game with you? Teach me how to play this game online, or, you know, make sure that we're connecting with our kids, even in the ways they're gaining information. And that's not easy to do.
Well, speaking of gaming, the only game that I really played with my kids online was Madden Football. And ever since they moved out and went to college, I haven't played since. But, you know, Jim, we're going to take a little break here for a commercial. But when we come back, we've been talking about parenting and grandparenting better. And what I'm meaning by that is sometimes parents, grandparents have had to step into the role of parenting.
Yeah.
But when we come back, what I'd like to do is discuss how do we serve our adult age kids who are now having kids as grandparents.
Great. Okay, that's good for everybody.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team, developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practice lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
Jim, so...
By the way, Grant, I want that guy's voice.
I know, he's got a great voice.
It's awesome. So he's a great voiceover.
Being a parent of adult age kids, yeah, and then yeah, grandparenting. I haven't gotten there yet. Four adult age kids, I'm not a grandparent yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of people out there that have grandkids, and they're trying to find the lane and being respectful to their kids. What are the, let's start with the things that you've observed and seen over the years, or maybe recently, that have been like, oh no, I can't believe that you did that. What would be an example of some of the things that people have done?
Well, first of all, 10% of the population now have grandparents parenting their kids, mm-hmm, their grandkids. They are parenting. Mm-hmm. And they're the primary, you know, people. That's huge. And that's changed. I mean, grandma and grandpa were there and they were influential, have always been. But today that percentage, you know, has grown like crazy. Well, you know, part of it is we have to learn how to do life with our adult children. I think before we can be a good grandparent, we have to make sure that we do well with our own grandchildren. Notice I said doing life. I didn't say parenting our yeah, adult kids, because, you know, we focused for two decades on our kids. Pretty much we were in control. When they got in high school, that's questionable. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we were at least consultants, but now we're not needed. And what I oftentimes say is, you're kind of fired as a day-to-day parent. Mm-hmm. And that means that your kids need to have you give them the passport to adulthood, whether they're acting like adults or not. But when they make babies and now you have grandkids, your job is to come alongside the parents and serve them. And that is weird, because sometimes, at least even in our own life, and I love my kids and I love how they're parenting, but they do some goofy things. And I was kind of in my opinion, with my kids do. And I'm like, man, I do something different right now with these kids. But what I need to do is, and I have a book on this called Doing Life with Your Adult Children, Keep Your Mouth Shut and the Welcome Mat Out. And that pretty much describes the book, right? And so I think sometimes we have to just cheer them on, go, okay, I'm not sure I would have disciplined them that way. But, you know, the parents take the lead. When the parents see you as cheerleading, then you're safe. And then I find that my kids will, I have two daughters who have kids, one daughter not yet. And the two who do, you know, this weekend, because it was a birthday weekend for my wife, you know, they were in town and they were there and, you know, cheering on. They pulled me aside and said, hey, what would you do in this case? So you move the relationship from day-to-day parent-child to a more mentor-type relationship. And you're in the process of that with your kids even before grandkids. So, you know, part of that is the transition from, you know, teen to adulthood is not easy. They've never been an adult. You've never been the parent of adults. So, you know, we don't know what we're doing. And so we've got to make that transition. And for most cases, not all the cases, mm-hmm, but for most cases, we have a little bit of a season where the season you're in, Steve, the season with your kids as adults, but they don't have, you don't have grandkids yet, because you're now practicing it. How am I going to mm-hmm treat my adult kids when the grandkids come? Well, in a book I wrote called Finding Joy in the Empty Nest, it was during COVID, and I did a bunch of focus groups on Zoom. And it was interesting, because I would start talking about empty nest and adult kids, and people cried in every focus group. There was grief issues, kids violating their values, all these things. Then I talked about grandkids, and guess what? They all smiled. And some had concerns about their teenage grandson who was smoking pot or something, but most were like, the grandkids, you know, it really changed. It was really a unique deal because they were so excited about it. But I've learned that, you know, my greatest legacy may not be with my three daughters. It may be with my grandkids, and my grandkids get attention that I I give them, where I didn't give my own kids some of that. Like my grandson James, he's 8. I mean, I go to every one of his games, and I went to my kids, my girls, they were in gymnastics and cheerleaders and all that kind of stuff. So I went to those, but man, I'm more engaged in the game. And then even in our home, we're pretty excited about the children's Bible for him. And so I've read the children's Bible with him. It's a big, thick Bible. I've read it through with him 3 times. He's 8. I didn't do that with my kids. Mm-hmm. So grandparents can have a great influence. And then we hand them back to the parents with the chocolate on their face, or, you know, the poopy diaper or whatever. Although I did some poopy diapers this weekend, because we've got, one of the babies, they just kept handing the baby to me, which is great. So yeah.
When our kids were little, I know for me, it was, okay, we've got this, we've got, you know, bills, we've got work, and make sure clients are happy.
Right.
We're kind of running at things, and there's this like busyness, but we want to be engaged and be as best parents as we can. But you know, life kind of takes over.
Right.
You miss windows and certainly then go back and backfill that. Yeah. So with regard to that comment, you know, I facilitate a lot of gatherings and meals and luncheons, and I always give people in the room, you know, 10 seconds, 15 seconds to give me a little something about them as they go around. And what I found most of the time is that, you know, most groups will have like 132 grandkids, but no kids.
Right.
Well, everyone is like, oh, I got 5 grandchildren. I got 12 grandchildren.
I mean, yesterday I was speaking in Los Angeles, and so I wasn't there when the grandkids showed up for the big party for my wife. Yeah. And so I walk in the door, and my wife doesn't look up at me. She's busy doing something. Yeah. My 3 daughters didn't really look up at me, but the grandkids went, they call me Papa Jay. Papa Jay's here. Yay. And then Huxley, who's 5 or 3 and a half, he just said, come on, Papa Jay. And he takes me to a truck, and I'm on the ground playing with Huxley. Well, you know, I'm getting greeted. So part of it is just the fact that this kid really likes me and is happy to see me. And the others are like, oh, hey, how you doing? You know? Yeah. So again, what a joy to be able to do that. And so I get that the people that you're facilitating are going, yeah, here's the pictures of my grandkids. I actually changed my phone because my daughter, Heidi, she's my youngest. She goes, you have pictures of the grandkids on your phone, you know, my phone cover. Yeah. You don't have us, anybody else. And so I thought, oh man, I need to get a family photo just because, this is, you know, this is James, this is Charlotte, this is Huxley, this is Bodie. And, you know, I'm doing all that. And, you know, you got to be careful because they do need to know that they're still loved. And,
you touched on something a moment ago, which is allowing our kids who are becoming adults at whatever age of responsibility comes to allow them to become an adult without, you know, holding on. You mentioned about giving them their passport, and then it's the Social Security card, and then it's signing over the car when maybe they get out of college or they start adulting.
Right.
Then they get their own auto insurance. They're kind of doing life. No more dad or parent credit card. Now they're independent. Yeah. What are some of the tips that you would give parents that might have a hard time letting go of their kids to allow them to be adults, to thrive?
Oh, it's hard. This is hard. I mean, if you didn't like my first principle, you're fired as a parent. At least that means that your role as a day-to-day parent. The next one you're going to hate. Unsolicited advice is taken as criticism. Mm-hmm. This shocked me. I'm an advice giver, and I'd been an advice giver to my kids. And all of a sudden, what I realized with adult kids is that they don't hear my good advice. Mm-hmm. They hear, you don't trust me to be an adult. Mm-hmm. And that shocked me. And so I've had to learn to almost ask permission, you know, hey, do I have permission to speak into this? And most of the time the kids say yes. One time Christy said, not now, Dad. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait, people pay me to give them advice and you don't want my advice. And it was on a move. They were moving for a year to Texas. And it was about that. And then it was a disaster move. Mm-hmm. We get there a week later to help them kind of move in and all this. And they'd lost a crib. They literally off the truck. They had the bed never was a bed again because they lost the screws or whatever it was. So, you know, they just had their mattress, you know, and we were talking about the disaster. And she goes, Dad, you had an idea. And I said, well, yeah, but you didn't want me to give you that idea. She goes, I know, but what was it? I tell her, and she goes, that's a great idea. Why didn't you bug me and push in there and tell me? We should have done that. It would have saved our crib. It would have saved our bed. And anyway, it's sometimes experience. The other principle is experience is a better teacher than advice.
Yeah, Jim, one topic I'd love to touch on, and I'm 56. So over the last couple of years, I've been gleaning and learning from a lot of folks. And I think I might have shared this with you. But kind of the 3 lanes that we fall into, which is, what is our family legacy? Mm-hmm. What is the the difference that we want to make with our kids, our grandkids, and maybe if we're blessed to see our great-grandchildren.
Right.
And then how are we making a difference with regard to our business or vocational or ministry platforms? How are we serving and advancing the gospel, the Great Commission, et cetera? But then there's the money piece.
Right.
The money piece and the family legacy piece. Kind of share, how do families navigate that, that you've experienced?
Yeah, well, I think it goes back partly, and it's a great question, by the way. I think it goes back partly on the finance piece, mm-hmm. that the bottom line is to help your kids become financially independent. Mm-hmm. They don't have to be wealthy, but financially independent and responsible adults.
Yeah.
So when you do that, money sometimes can be the great divide. And so we have to be careful that we're not enabling dependency on us. We're of a couple that actually went into their retirement funds, bought the dream house. It was actually a better house than theirs for their young kids because they wanted that house and they thought, we can do this. And then the kids couldn't afford the mortgage and the parents, you know, get involved. And finally, he has to go back. He's retired. He goes back to work because he's lost so much money on this this house. Well, that's not a smart idea. That wasn't a smart idea on their part. I mean, here I am. I mean, I make mistakes too. And 75% of parents of adults help their kids one way or another. Mm-hmm. But I think we have to, the bottom line is, are they becoming responsible adults? Are they becoming financially responsible and independent of you? Because that's how they're, that's a major part of it. So can you build legacy? Sure. Like in our, you know, the day that our kids have a child. So we have, you know, now four grandchildren, you know, we start a 529 for their college and we put money into that. So we're going to help. We're investing. We're co-investing in that. We just re-upped our living trust. Not that you would think it's all that impressive, but we did it. And we put more money into the grandkids for education with some, you know, boundaries and stuff, because I don't know what will happen. So those are things, you know, we're excited about that. Part of the financial thing, I think we can help them, and their parents do a great job and whatnot, but they're not thinking about that right now. They've got little kids. They're not thinking about college and whatnot. We are. Yeah. And so part of that is just simply doing that with kind of a no strings attached, like when you need to come to every birthday party and you need to do this. No. But you know, that part of that on the finance side, I think that's key. And I think part of my job is going to be, I even played around with it a little bit yesterday with James at 8, is part of that is for me to help him to learn to be a good steward of money, because he doesn't know. I mean, I remember saying to James one time, would you like me to give you $100 or do you want an ice cream? Well, where did he go? I want the ice cream. Sure. And so I'm trying to teach him the value of money and some of those kind of things. And we have a pool in our backyard and he took some tiki torches and threw them into the water just because you can. And he broke the tiki torches. And I thought Christy did a really good job, my daughter, because she said, James, you're going to have to work off paying for this. And so Christy actually immediately Venmo'd me the money. I wish she would have just gone on Amazon and bought these little tiki torches, but she Venmo'd me the money. She goes, hey, I'm getting paid back by James. And so what I found was yesterday, grandma, we needed something cleaned out of the pool. And so James cleaned the pool and grandma gave him $10. I mean, my gosh, I would have done it. Well, I would have done it for free. I would have needed to have done it for free. But you know, part of that was that he was learning to work. So for 15, he made $10 for 15 minutes of kind of fun. But the point being is that that's a responsibility. You know, you mess up something, yeah, you pay it. Okay. And I think those are the kind of things that you can sometimes communicate with your own children, but don't, what I say is don't jump in. Now I admit I've jumped in. I remember Christy didn't want Charlotte to have ice cream when she was a little baby, and both her husband, whose name is Steve, like you, Steve and I, you know, we were at a Golden Spoon yogurt place and we kind of put some on our little fingers and put them there. And then we got in trouble, but I didn't have to, you know, go home with Christy. So he probably got in more trouble than I did, but you know, yeah, you can have fun. I mean, you spoil them, you do those kind of things, but also part of it is teaching them, you know, stewardship, responsibility.
Yeah.
And especially as they get older. But you know, I don't think you want to be the bank, because I see too many people enabling dependency. And you know, you can help, but you don't want to enable them, because what that does is that creates entitled kids who have a failure to launch.
Yeah, and we've certainly gotten to that point in American culture where there's a lot of entitlement. So you mentioned enable. My wife and I, Shannon and I, for years, in fact, when our girls were in high school and our boys were in college, we started to learn as parents, as our kids were becoming young adults, such a thin line between enabling and empowering. And let me put this into a spiritual context. The Great Commission and the gospel, this is about empowering, equipping leaders.
Right.
So if truly we do want to empower and equip the next generation of leaders, we've got to be careful not to overstep those bounds. So what would be some tips as it relates to how do we go about empowering our kids? Yeah.
Well, I think we empower them by coming alongside them, but not doing it for them. Let's say we're helicopter parents. You know, that was a phrase that's been around for a long time. But if we are helicopter parents, we need to land the helicopter in order for them to make some of those decisions on their own. And then it's hard. I mean, you talked about the Great Commission. Our daughter, Christy, when she was in college, she wrote a column. She was a journalism major. She wrote a column for the school newspaper, and she said, I had to disown my parents' faith to own my own faith. Mm-hmm. Well, the fruit doesn't fall far from the tree. We go to the same church. There's certain things but that freaked us out. But you know what? It was the best thing it could possibly be. She had to learn that we were not going to, you know, shun her if she made choices different than us. Same with my daughter, Becca. When she was in college, she got a nose ring. I mean, who cares about it? Nose rings don't bother me. I don't worry about tattoos and things like that. So the first week she comes home, she has this nose ring. Now it's a little tiny cute nose ring, but it's like, I look at it and it's massive. And she smirks. Guy goes, Dad, what do you think? And I go, what? I'm totally lying. And she goes, the nose ring. And I go, oh, well, hey, your nose, your ring. I don't know that that's a good thing to say, but I just went, your nose, your ring. And what I think she was saying was, if I live my life a little different than you, are you going to still love me? And is that going to be okay? Mm-hmm. And again, I mean, it's a nose ring. We're not talking about somebody who was, you know, making, you know, grandiose, you know, meth decisions or, you know, something like that. But I think we have to make sure that we help them become who God created them to be. Yeah. And that's hard because, you know, we want them to be, you know, all that we had meant to be or whatever. I actually say a prayer sometimes saying, Lord, help me not to parent the kid I was or the kid I thought they were going to be, but help me parent those kids. And that's an important role for me to learn.
Just a couple of weeks ago, you know, it's yard work season. It's springtime. And a couple of weeks ago, I was passing by a neighbor's house and I saw the big pile of mulch in the driveway. Here in the South, you know, you get mulch delivered and then the teenage guys get wheelbarrows and shovels out. And I took a picture and sent that to my sons who are now 27 and 30. And both of them responded, said, the good old days, you know. But maybe like Jim, like you and Kathy, we didn't offer allowances.
Right.
But it was, hey, you're a part of the Caliper family. And as part of the Calipers, you do work and chores and you're responsible. But if you do the extra, then you can make a little bit more. So a quick, funny little story, and then we'll go to another commercial break. My second son was in college. He was in Nashville. Shannon and I went to go see him. We went to dinner and he said, Dad, you know, I've been a little nervous to talk to you about this, but do you think there's a possibility I can get a little extra money? And I said, well, for what? He says, well, you know, I want to have a little extra money, hang out with my buddies. And I said, okay, I get that. He said, I want to get a little extra money so I can, you know, join a gym and I can keep in shape. And he said, you know, just to have a little bit more social life. And I said, oh, I got the perfect thing for you. I said, you could actually get paid about $20 an hour to test drive cars. And he's like, well, what do you mean? And I said, yeah, and you can stay in shape and you can have some buddies. It's called being a valet.
Yeah, I did that Disneyland Hotel. I love that job.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's take another quick little commercial break and then we'll come back, Jim. And I've got a couple of great conversation pieces for you and I'm looking forward to that.
Good.
Having a teenager at risk who is going through a traumatic experience can be difficult on parents, siblings, and all who are working with that young person. No family should have to go through this process alone. West Shield Adolescent Services is here to ensure you don't have to. Many of the psychologists and psychiatrists we work with have spoken about the stress families go through. Not just the young person, but the parents needing to get their child to a program where they can get the help they need. West Shield aims to lessen that stress. Every case goes through a thorough intake process with one of our knowledgeable, compassionate intake coordinators. We want to know the likes, the dislikes, and the fears of each child. This important information is taken into consideration when choosing the best suited team member for each individual teenager. West Shield agents come from all different walks of life, giving us a diverse group of team members to ensure a personalized, compassionate experience for every teenager. This allows us to make certain every young person we work with gets to the chosen program in the best possible state of mind. We contacted over 600 of the youth we've worked with in the past to see where they're at now. 97% of these individuals told us how much their lives had improved, that they had better relationships with their friends and families, had gone on to marry, have kids, and were now using the skills they learned in their program to raise their own children. Our role of transporting at-risk teenagers is a vital step in the process of ensuring a youth's ability to thrive in their new environment, and is a role we don't take lightly. The recovery process can be a long one, but like any journey, it started with a single step.
Jim, I'd like to go down the lane as parents, not just the traditional parent, mom, dad, but you've got single parents, dads that are single, widowed, widowers, single moms, unequally yoked couples that are trying to make decisions on behalf of their families. Let's start with just the traditional marriage in America, family. The success of a family's got to start with the couple, being able to take the way that they were brought up and raised, bringing that into the marriage and then working through things. Yeah. Sometimes it's a little harder for couples to work through different stuff in their life that they were born into. Give us a sense of kind of how are you seeing the successful marriage, doing marriage better as a part of the element, because that's really the cornerstone to then being able to do parenting better. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, you're right. I mean, I say all the time to people, I'll say, do your kids a favor, be intentional in your marriage with your spouse. Because a lot of us get so focused on our kids, we become a kid-focused marriage. I don't think that was ever meant to be. So obviously, I mean, if we got little kids, we're trying to make sure that, you know, we're not going to say, hey, we're going away for the weekend. You know, there's peanut butter and you're only four, but I know you can figure it out. You're not going to do that, of course. But, you know, taking care of your own marriage. And what we're seeing is, and there's one demographic where divorce is on the rise, and that is actually 50 and over. And empty nest starts at 48.9. You can Google me on that. It didn't with us. Kathy and I were in our 60s when that took place. But what happens is we put all of our energy into our kids, and then we bury stuff under the mat with our spouses. And so, no, I think there's basic things we have to do where we put energy into our marriage, even during the kid era. And I think that's going to help much better. Plus, it's going to help give the kids. Today on social media, it's my wife's birthday. And one of my, there was a picture of me and my wife, and one of my daughters went, the dream team. Well, she had no idea that she just like made my life. I didn't, you know, I looked at a bunch of comments, but I was like, the dream team, you know, for her to say that meant that she saw us do a date night every week. I mean, there were weeks we didn't, but most weeks we did. She saw us have that kind of discipline. And I think that was important for her. And I think that's helping her in her, you know, for this one, you know, kind of new marriage, 2.5 years. And so I think we really do have to engage in that. You know, we fell in love. And then if we're not careful about it, we begin to, you know, kind of stray from the basics. It was that great theologian, Vince Lombardi, coach of the Green Bay Packers, who said, when you strayed away from the faith, or when you strayed away from the basics, you've gone a long ways toward defeat. Well, I think we stray away and then we drift. And then one day we look up in our marriage and we say, we're lost because we've been putting all of our energy into our kids or into our work. If we put energy into our marriage, it's going to work. I mean, even in troubled marriages, the latest research says that if you have a troubled marriage and you persevere, that 78% will say that you're better off after 5 years. They say that, the people who are in the troubled marriages. So yeah, I think we have to put our energy into that. And the reason I think some marriages go down south isn't because of adultery or abuse or all those kind of things. I mean, I get that, addictions, but I think a lot of it is we just drifted away.
Yeah.
And now we look up and we go, I don't even know this person, or I don't even like this. Why am I with this person? Yeah.
It's intentionality.
Yeah.
Time spent, conversations, openness, transparency. So when our girls were still in high school and our boys were in college, kind of that same season of the illustration I just shared, you know, we were going through some stuff. We've been married 35 years this August. Every marriage does. And if a marriage doesn't go through stuff, then you're missing something in your marriage. But I remember a couple of years after that, we worked through some things and we got on the same page. And one of our kids, actually, in a conversation, very casual with my wife, she said, you know, I just want to bring this up, that we've kind of as kids been talking about something. And we just want to say, Mom, you and Dad worked through some things. She used maybe some other language, but she said, thank you for working through all your crap, because you're a great family and you're a good marriage. And we're just grateful you guys worked through it. There's a praise to that, to say, you know, life's not perfect. We've made a commitment and the grass is not greener. So kind of work through your stuff.
Exactly. So many people say this to me, Steve, that, you know, they're in a, you know, they get rid of a marriage and they think that other marriage is, and they do the same things. And so now they're even struggling. I mean, the second marriage, and I know there, I have friends who are in a second marriage who are actually doing great, but most say this was worse and harder than the first, you know, one, but they're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And so I think the advice of your daughter.
And I know some marriages too that are in a happy second marriage or even a third marriage.
Yeah. Right.
But they would say that the marriage that they wish they would have really fought for was their first.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, and the ones who do well in those second and third marriages are the ones who figure it out. They go, okay, I made a lot of mistakes in this part, so now I'm going to do it this other way. Mm-hmm. And so there's hope. I mean, of course there is, at whatever stage we're in. And obviously there are people who are fighting it out as single parents, struggling with, you know, kind of feeling like they're out there on their own.
Yeah.
And I get that. And I applaud them, because I think some of the finest parents are single parents. But again, if we're married, then I think we've got to, you know, work on that. I mean, I tell people, have a date night every week if you can. You know, make sure you're working on your own intimacy, deal with the issues, talk, you know, emotional, you know, and for guys, this is the word emotional, you know, energy. I mean, they're like, what, you know, but, you know, put emotional energy into the relationship.
Yeah. Where do you see, Jim, single adults? There's certainly a thin line to the pace, to the responsibility, especially if the kid's a little, the balancing of kids that you're caring for, the routine of sports and activities and involvement, and then showing up to the parenting classes and being available as a dad or a mom that's single, but then having to work and making sure that the bills are paid, that you're kind of, you know, there's a lot of challenges. What's the thin line between being that, you know, mom or dad that's single on mission versus kind of fun dad, fun mom, that you're trying to be their friend?
Yeah, I don't think you can be the friend. And I have great respect and admiration for single parents.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
And it's good, but it's hard. Yeah. But when the parent tries to be the friend, and again, you know, their spouse has left them for some reason or died or whatever it is, they're, you know, there's a lot of negatives that they're already feeling. And now when their kid becomes a teenager, say, and now the kid doesn't like you either, it's like, well, I'll just be their friend. That's not going to help them become responsible adults. You now have an entitled kid. It's not going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't be their friend. And that doesn't mean you have to be a bad person, but you have to be the parent.
Yeah.
And in doing that, you know, I laugh, but I always say your kids already think you're old anyway. So they don't want you as the best friend. Right. So, you know, I think it's really important that we be the parent, and the parent means that we treat them differently. And part of it is, what is the bottom line? Help them become responsible adults at whatever age. If they could be 10, and part of your parenting is helping them become responsible adults. Now, they're a long way to adulthood, but in that time period, you got to give them responsibilities, and just not, you know, friends will, you know, you that means you're not going to, you know, hold them accountable for things, or, you know, there's tough love. And what I oftentimes say, tough love isn't shunning your kids or being angry, I mean, and mean. Tough love is just allowing the consequences of their poor decisions to happen so they can learn. And what your job is to then give them empathy, because you've already talked to them about it. That's what a parent does. I mean, signing up for parenthood is really hard. Making babies, I'm all for, that's great. It's easy when it comes to, and fun. When it comes to raising kids, it's not easy. And so that's where I think we need that tribe. I think we need that community. I think we need, you know, like for us, we were from our church, we were in a small group with seven couples. And that was so cool when our kids were like in second grade on up, because we would meet every week and, you know, whatever we were studying, we always came back to parenting and marriage. And we kind of raised each other's kids and helped each other and leaned on each other. And I think we really need that. You know, there's a proverb that says iron sharpens iron. Yeah. And I think we can, as parents, we've got to find that. Well, single parents need to find that even more so. So they need to make sure that they have a tribe around them who's going to help them do the, you know, the best they can. And I think a lot of single parents are doing that. Good resources out there today too.
Jim, I believe the largest unreached people group in the world is God's children as a body. We as parents, you and I are Christian men. We're Christian husbands and dads. You know, we have faults in the journey, but that's the journey. How would you give some advice or speak into a couple that's maybe unequally yoked, or as adults, as the grandparent piece, where we have kids that are not Christian, but now they're having kids, and that thin line, you know, in our spiritual preference, which is a relationship with Christ with our grandkids. I know that could be a little tricky too.
Yeah. Well, I think we have to be careful because we want to, you know, preach at them or nag at them or, you know, do whatever. And, you know, Madeline Engel said something very interesting. I'm going to paraphrase her deal, but she said, no one comes to faith by negativity, preaching, correcting. You know, they do it because there is an aroma in your life that they go, I want that aroma. And so that's an important concept that we miss a lot of times. Yeah. And we tend to go easy or lazy toward the preaching negative, you know, whatever, and luxury. That doesn't work. It never has worked. I don't know why. And yet a lot of non-believers look at those of us as Christians and they kind of go, these are just the preachy negative type people. Yeah. No, I think it's possible. I mean, I can walk with somebody and disagree with them on a subject and still love on them and care for them. And, you know, so I think we'd be with our families who aren't really necessary there. I think we're their best cheerleaders. Yeah. We come alongside them. We serve them. And in doing that, I think then, and we serve them regardless if we're trying to, you know, get them to become Christian or not. We just serve them. That's what we do. I think that changes things. And you know, we become the safe people.
Yeah. My wife has often said, find a teachable moment. When there's no conflict, it's easy, et cetera. Jim, thank you for taking 50 minutes to just have this conversation about parenting, grandparenting, and doing parenting better.
Yeah.
Alan, I know, is grateful that we stepped in and tried to fill his shoes. I know it was a big role to fill, but thank you for joining, being a part of the Answers Network today.
So. Well, Steve, thank you for what you do, too. You're making a difference worldwide, and I'm, as you well know, I deeply respect and admire you. So thanks for the time together. Awesome. I love talking with you.
Yeah, you bet. Jim, thank you. 30 years and counting. You got 30 and 30 more to go.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I'm not going to have any hair 30 years from now either, so I'll look the same. You're going to, you know, maybe get gray or something. You look a lot younger.
Awesome. Jim, thank you. God bless. Have a great rest of your day. Thank you so too. Much.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.